From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capitol Notes podcast for Friday, September 17th. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly. Are you still the blog king?
I'll leave that for you to decide, Mr. Blogger.
Blogger extraordinaire for the LA Times. And Juliet Williams, who we know is the top of the heap of all of them.
You know things are fun if Juliet's in the house because she doesn't do the boring budget stuff.
We're only talking governor's race.
This is true. I've been spared.
Juliet Williams from the Associated Press is with us. And yeah, we don't have anything to talk about the budget because guess what?
There's a campaign going on, huh?
Well, yeah, but there's also was nothing going on with the budget because the governor was in Asia there were no meetings. And so we'll talk about the budget next time.
Will we?
Will we?
I'll skip that one, thanks.
Yeah. You're right. Juliet will be somewhere else on that day. No, we want to talk about the governor's race, which has been, it's been an interesting week. Is that's like, you know, is that an understatement?
It's a bit of an understatement.
It's been a busy one. I mean, there's a lot
of
stuff.
Yes.
First thing, Monday morning, we get to hear about Jerry Brown insulting the former president.
Yes. So let's try to figure out how we jump into this week. Let's just jump right.
The week was off to a rollicking start.
Let's just go right there.
Well, do we start with the CTA ad on Friday or the Clinton video on
Monday?
Well,
I don't know if we play chronology here. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just kind of back up and do this. At the end, let's do this, and I'll ask you guys what you think. At the end of the week here, as we sit here, there goes the iPhone again. Anthony's a busy man. As we sit here at the end of the week, any major game changer, anybody measurably in our completely analytical world, measurably up or down by week's end, anything that really changed the dynamic of the race, any wounds open that are going to fester, I mean, you know, and on and on. I mean, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? Ms. Williams, you're a... What do you think?
I think when you put it in those terms, probably not anything major, but
is it stuff that just we watch?
It's possible that Brown could be hurt from the whole Clinton gaffe. They did manage to control it pretty quickly, having Clinton come out and endorse him a day after Jerry apologized. But that could have pissed off a lot of Democrats, and I think it adds to the uneasy feeling of not knowing that a lot of Dems have about not knowing what Jerry Brown could do at any moment, and this sort of adds to that narrative about him.
And to remind folks, just really quickly, if you didn't get every single bit of what happened this week, just to be careful for the two podcast listeners that aren't watching it like us, the little dust up between former President Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown. Kind of largely started from Brown being videotaped by someone in the crowd.
Some crowd somewhere where no other media was, apparently.
Right. At an event over the weekend where he was talking about the ad that now is in dispute, the ad where Clinton's, criticizing Brown for raising taxes back from the presidential primary, a debate ad that Whitman is running. And Brown... I don't even quite. Of course, there's the phrase that we'll all remember, where he said something like, "Well, Clinton's never really told the truth," and the crowd in this video was like, "Oh!" And then he said, and then he talked about Lewinsky, but then he said,
"Well, he didn't mention her by
name."
No,
but he said, "I did not have taxes with this state."
Yes,
that's the phrase that I'll remember for this campaign.
The crowd there seemed to like it, you know. But
and then basically, Clinton and Brown apparently made up by the end of the week after Brown apologized. Clinton said, "I endorse him."
Well, and the reporter from the story 18 years ago went back and corrected his story 18 years later. Yeah. I mean, that's about, you know, that's Capitol Weekly pace there, you know, in terms of corrections. But what I don't know, and what Juliet was talking about earlier about this unpredictability of Brown, what I can't figure out, and after the national, after some of the results elsewhere on Tuesday, I'm convinced I don't understand this country. I don't understand where voters are. I wouldn't pretend to try to prognosticate this one because I think I'm obviously out of touch. But
well, good night, everyone.
Yeah. But having said that, let me offer my analysis. No, what I don't know about that unpredictability question is whether that's a hindrance or an asset to Brown.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the big question.
Isn't it both? Isn't it both? Isn't it one of his
strengths?
But among
whom?
And his,
well, you know?
I mean, the thing is that this is, you know, if you believe this argument, it's that Brown is a real person, and he comes off as a real person, and he has his strengths and he has his weaknesses, and he's able to he's able to show, look, I'm not a scripted guy. This is the ad we saw at the end of the week that Brown put out, which we'll talk about it in a moment, about the sheer number of ads we seem like we have seen here this week.
The fireside chat ad.
Yeah, but this is the is the I'm not full of slogans, I'm a real guy kind of thing. But at the same time, right, this is a Brown who's operating in a media and political environment that is not the political and media environment that he cut his political teeth in, that
right.
he really knows. I mean, he has not run a competitive statewide campaign in a very long time. No offense to Chuck Puchigian, who ran against him for Attorney General in 2006.
None taken.
But Jerry Brown has not been in this environment. And so videos pop up online instantaneously.
He doesn't seem to get that yet, that anywhere you are, there will be a video taken and it will appear on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, maybe now he gets that.
And I think on the whole issue of does it hurt or help him, in a normal year, it could be both. It could be appealing, could be charming. But we keep hearing this rhetoric, and as you said, Anthony, who knows what will happen on Election Day, but that Republicans are motivated this year and that they want to come out and that they're angry. And so the big issue for Dems is going to be whether they can get their voters to come out. And if Dems are lukewarm about Brown and they're sort of not sure or not passionate— I don't know if that'll happen.
Right. I mean, the only difference between California and the rest of the country is that Democrats start with a 14% head start, you know, I mean, at least in registration. And so, yeah, right. That's the those are the big questions. And it is interesting. I think this will be kind of the narrative story, you know, that gets written sometime in mid-November is whether, you know, we're in an era where a warts and all politician can still win. I mean, would we rather have warts and all, or would we rather have kind of a prepackaged, airbrushed, Photoshop, you know, candidate in that? I mean, because the Whitman campaign is so scripted.
Well, and that's
so scripted.
But what I was going to say is I think that one of the reasons that Brown stands out in this race for warts and all or good and bad is because there is such a clear, sharp contrast with
Huge.
Meg Whitman as a candidate. The Whitman campaign is a very tightly run, very focused, very packaged events kind of campaign.
Right.
And Brown's is not. And so I guess what I'm saying is, in addition to Jerry Brown being a bit quirky, the contrast is so obvious with a campaign and a candidate who is very careful.
And we'll see if that continues. I think it was sort of interesting, too, that on Wednesday, Meg Whitman went to San Francisco, went to Yelp, right?
And, so fun.
And anybody—
yeah, you were there.
And you were there. And, and you know better than anybody, you know, probably having followed Whitman around at these events— most of her events are with very friendly audiences, right? And this event at Yelp kind of stood out just because there were real people in the
talk
audience.
Talk about that. I mean, this. And first of all, was there really a beer tap?
There really was a beer tap.
Why was this the one event I didn't go to?
Well, I should say there was no beer flowing.
Okay.
It was just seen by all the reporters longingly as we entered the room.
And it was in everybody's story. It was in the description.
It was.
Every single person.
There was a beer tap at the offices of Yelp.
Yeah.
Well,
and Yelp is—they're the people who, what, do the reviews?
The online reviews where they don't do the reviews. Right. The people do the reviews.
Open source.
Yeah.
Review.
And anyone can presumably write up the restaurant that they just went to and offer their thoughts on it. Well, the crowd was interesting. It was made up of Yelp employees. There were about 250 of them there. And it was striking because they were so young. So that sort of plays into the whole, you know, tech startup with the beer keg.
Is it true that you can't be over 25 and work at Yelp? I saw you Facebook that. Or is that just being snarky?
I was exaggerating.
Okay. But they were all young.
Everyone knows it's 28. Come on.
They were all young. And in the few that I managed to grab afterward, and I asked them all for their ages, and each of them were under 24, I should say.
But over 21, right? To drink
absolutely,
that beer?
Over absolutely, over 21,
yeah. Okay.
But, you know, a remarkably engaged and interested and well-researched crowd. But as the one woman who asked the first question and sort of led off the assault against Whitman and said later, you know, we're overwhelmingly liberal here. We have a lot of gay staff and we're all very open and it's the heart of San Francisco.
And so then you probably wondered why did she go to this to do it?
A little bit. I mean, maybe it's her opening up or maybe it just wasn't well vetted.
Or do they think
maybe she's sensitive to this criticism that she's just a prepackaged candidate and feels the need
her,
now.
She or her campaign, by extension, right? Do they think they're going to get credit for going into the lion's den? Because, I mean, at first, you know, when you see she's doing an event in San Francisco, you automatically think she's going to the lion's den.
Right.
And she did. She got some tough questions
but
about...
But then it was a tech startup, too, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's along with kind of her theme. And so I don't... It's possible that, you know, they just weren't... They thought all tech startups are the same. I think, you know, usually when you go to a lot of those Silicon Valley ones, you get some engineers and some very pragmatic kind of people who want to talk about the budget. That was not this crowd.
Right. She got questions about the money she spent, which this week became part of the story, too, because she put another $15 million into the race. And ta-da! Broke the record. The national record, beating Michael Bloomberg's re-election bid.
Suck it, Bloomberg. She,
for personal spending.
For personal spending. She's now at
any individual race.
$119 million of her own money. By far and away, the biggest one in California. I mean, you know, my favorite stat is that if you look at the biggest spenders of the decade, if you add up almost like seven of the top 10 biggest personal spenders in California in the last decade, she's now spent more than all of them combined.
Wow.
There's no Checky in there, though.
No, but over the last, I mean, you, if you look at all the Steve Bings, the Reed Hastings, the...
Not the candidates, but the donors.
No, yeah. But for the people who have spent their own personal money in California politics, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers, everybody, if you all combine, she spent more than them. Only Wesley and Poizner and now herself.
And Checky. No?
This decade.
Okay.
Decade, Anthony. Decade. But,
what year is this?
So, but she got a question about that, buying the election or something.
She
some
got
kind of
a
criticism.
Couple of questions about buying the election. She was asked why she's running a campaign based on lies and misinformation.
And that goes back to the Clinton ad a lot.
And it sort of shows that Brown this week was able to get that message out. You know? I mean.
But to be fair, she handled it pretty well. She stayed on her talking points. She didn't get flustered. She was, you know, sort of flash mobbed at the end, and she took the questions, and you know that was less gracious than during her official stump speech, but she stayed on her talking points, and I don't think that satisfied the crowd, but she didn't show too much.
Yeah,
can we talk a little bit about and it plays off of the Clinton ad, and I'm assuming most folks have seen this ad, but if you haven't seen the ad, let me play the audio.
Jerry Brown's good old days. But what really happened?
CNN, not me, CNN says his assertion about his tax record was, quote, just plain wrong. Jerry Brown went out there and took credit for the fact that the people of California voted for Proposition 13, which lowered taxes, which he opposed. And now he's going around taking credit for it. He raised taxes as governor of California. He had a surplus when he took office and a deficit when he left. He doesn't tell the people the truth.
Okay, so the crux of that ad, you know, being that we're using Bill Clinton's words against Jerry Brown. It's not Meg Whitman, and that's supposedly – yeah. And I think that at the first blush, that was a very powerful ad. Then we've had this whole discussion this week about were Clinton's numbers right. Anthony, you mentioned a moment ago the CNN reporter who first did the story said, well, the numbers weren't all there, although he did say the premise of my point of my story is still valid, is that Brown was taking credit in that race for a lot of things he didn't do as governor, namely the Prop 13 property tax cut. But then we got a long discussion, the AP. You guys did some stuff on it. I did some stuff on it. You might have written something too, Anthony, about the spending.
Oh, I see.
About
Brown's. You read her, not me. I see how that works.
Well, no, but you made the point that Brown was able to get some traction about some of these things about his record as governor. And I think the AP story, they get lots of play. You're the Associated Press. But that helps make that point too, because the data – it depends on how you define the data. You know, I mean, you guys did a good job of going and adjusting for inflation and population growth, the actual spending under the Brown era. I mean, you can talk about that a little bit. But, I mean, we did have a discussion about Brown's record as governor this week. I mean,
an actual discussion about somebody's record?
Yeah, but at least, I mean, his record in terms of taxes and spending, right?
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, I think that piece that my colleague Samantha Young spent on – told hours working on doing math on, it kind of put the lie to a few of the facts that Meg Whitman has used in her more in her speech than even in that ad. But it just goes to show you once again that you can spin numbers any way you want. You can take only selective years to prove your point. You can, you know, finagle the budget when it comes back to that. But she has been claiming that Brown increased spending by 120%. As a Harvard MBA, I think she probably knew that that was a distortion.
Yeah, and on the same point, Brown, you know, had his first ad, his bio ad, where he, you know, took a lot of credit for a lot of things, talked about, you know, $4 billion in tax cuts. And in some of the looking back that I did on that, it's like, well, yes, but some of that was also things that were pushed by other state officials at the time, like indexing the personal income taxes for inflation. Those weren't all Jerry Brown features. And again, this is all goes to the fact of that whether you can call any of these outright lies or whether they are just depends on the way you examine the facts and the way you're presenting the facts, which is really what I think it is. It's you pick how you present them, and that's what the ads are all doing. That's what they're all doing.
Hey, look.
You're throwing up your hands like,
it's
politics.
Yeah, so, Arnold Schwarzenegger is taking credit for AB 32, I mean, you know, and is now defending it now in the campaign against Prop 23. I mean, is
– climate change.
Yeah, but that bill was written by Fran Pavli and pushed through the legislature by Fabian Nunez and the assembly staff. So, you know, a politician taking credit for something that they happen to be in the room for is not necessarily – news. I mean, I just that. Yeah, that's politics. There I go, throwing up my hands for all you listeners out there, both of you. But you know, but again, it's what I don't have a feel for yet. And you talked about wounds that will fester over the next 6 weeks and change here. That's what I don't know. I don't know how people are engaging in this race, what sticks and what doesn't. And I'm sure that there are daily tracking polls who can tell us some of this stuff. And we'll hear, you know, if Whitman stays on this message over the next couple of weeks, that at least, you know, we can bet that she at least believes that this is her best path to victory.
And also, but what message does Brown stay on? Because that's the other ad that I wanted to play a clip of, is that Brown's ad, the Pinocchio ads, where...
No points for originality, by the way.
There aren't. Well, let me play the ad.
Wouldn't it be nice if every time Meg Whitman told a lie, her nose would grow? Newspapers report the claims in this Meg Whitman ad are false, and she knows it. Taxes went down under Jerry Brown, but Whitman's nose keeps growing by the millions.
So, yeah, so we've got this whole, and you can't, in the audio, you can't see this graphic of Whitman with the Pinocchio hat on.
What does that mean that her nose grows by the millions? I don't
understand
what that
means.
Yes, I agree.
We all were wondering
that. By the millions that she spends?
His ad says her nose grows by the millions.
Yeah, I don't know.
You think there's
are those millimeters?
There's a disconnect there, is what you're saying. How many times in Pinocchio and politics do we hear? I mean, that's just, as you said, there are no points for creativity there.
No.
But what I don't understand is that, Juliet and I were talking about this before we started this podcast, which is that what is the ad message out of the Brown campaign at this point? Because now he's had four ads in roughly 2 weeks. First ad was a look how frugal I was at governor. Ads 2 and 3 are the short 15-second Meg Whitman is a Pinocchio liar ads. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back at the end of the week with another straight to camera. I'm a simple guy. I'm telling it as it is. And it just seems like there's a lot. I mean, what do you want the voters to think about her?
The Whitman campaign is doing both as well. They have you know, some positive Whitman spots running and then some attacks on Jerry Brown. I thought it was interesting. Brown's campaign manager was in Sacramento this week, and you were at this press conference where he unveiled the Pinocchio ads, and it was pretty telling. At the end of this press conference, he was taking issue with a Fox News poll that's out that showed Whitman up, and he was taking issue with the modeling.
Yeah, I asked him something about it, and then you asked him about it, right?
About the voter turnout. And he had this off-the-cuff remark, you know, where it was sort of after the TV cameras had shut down, and he said, you know, the problem with that poll is they assume 25% of the voter turnout is going to be declined to state voters, and everyone knows in races like this, declined to state voters are the first ones to check out. And so afterwards, there was some follow-up. I said, well, what do you mean a race like this? What are you talking about? And it's clear this is not, again, not a news flash, but what he meant and what he didn't directly say, but what he meant was in a negative campaign, you know, declined to state voters, independents are the ones who turn off. And that the Brown campaign seems to be bracing for a very negative campaign. Now, you can take issue with the verb tense. I'm sure the Brown campaign folks would say, it's already been a negative campaign. Whitman has spent blah, blah, millions of dollars, and 70% of her ads are negative. I mean, you know, the Brown campaign, I can assure you, would make that claim. But It doesn't bode well for anybody who's hoping for a high level of discourse here over the next six and a half weeks.
Not that I think any of us really expected that's
no.
what we were going to
no.
get anyway.
No, and I think that's some of what came out with these young people at Yelp yesterday was one of them even mentioned afterward, you know, we're the people who came out for Obama in 2008 and we want the positive message and we're already frustrated by this.
Right. And that is, I'm glad you said right. that because that's the other point I wanted to talk about really quickly about some of this polling stuff, because again, this is a favorite pastime of Jerry Brown's campaign manager, Steve Glazer. I'm sure I think he's talked to all of us at different times about this apparently. One of the things when he talks about polling is he talks about what the turnout models are, not just independents, right. but also Democrats and Republicans. And I think what's interesting here is that, you know, that is really the question, is who turns out for this race?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you said a moment ago, Anthony, talked about the registration advantage that Democrats have in the state. But that is a high watermark for Democratic registration and the gap between the two parties over the last several years. And those registration numbers somewhat are fueled by 2008,
mm-hmm.
by the Obama phenomenon yep. and all those people who turned out.
Yep.
If those Democrats don't turn out, those people that Julietta is just talking about, Brown's in trouble.
Yeah,
maybe he's in trouble. In addition to the fact that Whitman seems to be drawing some right. Democrats,
she's targeting
support.
Them hard.
Yeah,
she's
well, don't worry, John, because as John Burton said, they're all stoners and they're going to come out and vote for Prop 19. Right? That's how the Democrats are going to make up that
was the chairman of the Democratic Party who
yeah,
said that one
yeah.
time. Yes.
And Prop 19 is the legalization of marijuana right. initiative. I think that is the question: is sort of does the which is more insurmountable, or you know, which carries the day at the end? Is it the registration advantage, or is it the sort of enthusiasm gap that appears to exist nationally between Republicans and Democrats right now? That Republican voters are more motivated, just as Democratic voters were more motivated
in 2008. 2008. Yep.
Now, again, you have to sort of, if you adjust for inflation in your economics, you have to adjust for California in your political right. equations here. But I mean, that's the question. I think that that's kind of unknowable at this stage of the campaign.
And the other thing that happened this week, too, just for a moment, because you wrote about this, is you happen to find another policy document on Jerry's site.
Another mysteriously appearing.
I did. The budget. Yeah, I was trolling around the website looking for something else and found this budget document, which apparently was not quite. Wasn't supposed to be released yesterday, but was on the website.
Oh,
apparently,
really?
They're unswayed by our admonitions here on this podcast
yeah.
to inform us in advance.
But this is the
right.
second. Is this more than the second? Because the education thing, the same way, where
right.
it was just unceremoniously
and the environment
put
one
online.
Also.
And the environment, yeah.
yeah.
yeah. And so this is like it's these trickling out of Jerry Brown policy ideas without any real fanfare.
Right.
Which
they didn't even tweet this one.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's not so much as a tweet.
And you wrote that it looked like a Republican plan. You could almost say if it didn't have a Jerry Brown name on top of it.
Elements of it. I mean, there was what I found interesting as someone who has to cover government as well as politics is called to reconvene a tax commission. I mean, this was something that was embraced by Schwarzenegger and the commission that the work of the commission that was produced was quickly rejected and ignored by Democrats. There are some other ideas about streamlining environmental regulations and all sorts of other things that have been talked about by Republicans in the legislature for a long, long time. And so, the Whitman campaign wouldn't necessarily see that, or they would see, you know, evidence of hypocrisy in this document. But it is interesting. And again, I don't know. Jerry Brown has such a diverse record, and he's changed some policy positions over the years, and
evolution.
And has been able to reinvent himself politically. And I just don't know what voters think about him. I don't know how you create a narrative about Jerry Brown, and how that meshes with the narrative that some voters may already have about him.
I did notice also in that most recent ad something that you had brought up before, John, about him saying that he wouldn't raise taxes without voter approval,
right.
which we still have the great unanswered question about whether he plans some ballot mm-hmm. initiatives upon entering office.
Well, at some point last week, he had talked about getting a deal done by March and going to voters in mm-hmm. June
yeah.
of 2011.
It was a special mm-hmm. election idea yeah. that he said to the ad board at the San Francisco Chronicle.
But you try to pin them – that's what it was. It was yeah. the Chronicle. But you try to pin them down on that, and the campaign sort of shuns it. Now, By contrast, you know, trying to pin Whitman down on policy proposals, I've been doing some of that this week, and I find it to be a very frustrating exercise. I mean, just, you know, they refer you to this, you know, beautiful brochure
the
with
document,
lots of pictures.
The pamphlet. But
there are some things that are not explained and not articulated. And her stance on pensions, for example, if you were to read the document, you would believe that Whitman supports a 401k style pension plan for all state employees, including police.
Oh no, there's an exception. Yes.
But that exception's not in the book.
No,
and so
it's not.
Trying to get these answers out of the campaign, and they just refer you to the book, but it's not in the book. And the only reason I didn't write that story this week is because one of my colleagues at the LA Times happened to have notes from an event
that's how I know it too.
It's not how it's supposed to work. The diligence of reporters should not be saving candidates. It should be they've got a nice big staff over at the Whitman campaign. They should be equipped to answer some policy questions. And I do think that as we focus more on this race, it won't all be about policy, but there's going to be more of it, and it's going to be, you know, an issue for them to address the concerns.
Well,
of the
and
reporters.
I just think there's less and less about policy, it seems like. And at a certain point, you know, the Whitman folks had a strength with Brown at the beginning of, like, he has said nothing about what he'll do. We have said all these kinds of things. Now, there's still a lot of truth to that. Brown has been very evasive about a lot of things. But he does start to trickle out, I'll do a little of this, I'll do a little of that. And, you know, and whether his promises really can be counted on any more than hers, probably not. But so I think now that they don't quite have that edge as much anymore, in which case it goes back to what else is the campaign going to be about, which to me goes back to this issue of voter apathy and who turns out and who, you know, because you start to get this sense. I almost got this sense from some particular it's escaping me now, some particular reporting out of this week, that there's, you know, is there this pervasive kind of growing feeling that nobody likes either candidate here? Or, you know, that truly that the motivation for both candidates is lacking. You know, you've got a Republican who's a newcomer who's spending a tremendous amount of her own money and seems to be, you know, can she connect? Is she trying to buy the job? Whatever the criticisms is. Jerry Brown, been around forever, no new ideas, yada, 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 yada. In which case, then there becomes these people who go, I don't really want either one of them. In which case, then what happens? Lower turnout or hold your nose and pick somebody or what?
You said pick your nose.
Hold your nose.
Okay.
There was a few words in between.
I would guess, I mean, I would think lower turnout, but Dems would still have the edge. But some of those Dems are probably going to be peeled off by Meg Whitman. It's looking like a high apathy year, though.
I mean, I think perhaps the best parallel is 2002. You have a non-presidential year.
The Davis-Simon race.
You have a Democrat that has some issues at the top of the ticket. But a lot of Democrats did not. There was not an enthusiasm for Gray Davis in that election. But what the Davis campaign was able to do was to paint Bill Simon as not only somebody with no experience, but an extremist, a rich extremist who was trying to buy the election. I'm not sure that the Brown campaign has been able to paint Whitman as an extremist. Mm-hmm. I think her stance on social issues is different than Bill Simon. And that race was really close. I mean, that race was
And yet
was,
they
was
are trying
points.
To do some of that as the week comes to an end by trying to raise questions about her on the issue of abortion.
Right. Yeah. They can try, but I don't think it's going to be as successful as it was against Simon. And that race was really close. And so you take that, was it 52-48,
yeah,
I think,
so five
with Davis
points
Simon.
Or something. Yeah, 4 points, yeah.
And narrow it a little more. I mean, you're talking about a close race. Either way, I mean, I think that, you know, the polling shows this race is up for grabs. And I think, I mean, it feels like it is. Since we,
it right? does very much, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if that changes over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, the only other thing I would say is that I found interesting at the Yelp thing, and then we'll let all of this go, I suppose. Is she criticized Schwarzenegger for leaving?
She did
the country during the budget negotiations, and it comes back to something we have talked about before in this podcast and other reporters, and everybody talks about it, which is what's the Arnold Schwarzenegger factor in this race? Can Arnold keep himself out of the race? Can he avoid commenting or criticizing someone? Brown's going to go after him. Some already has. Whitman says that about him. You know, he's a bit of an X factor. I mean, granted, his popularity numbers aren't high, But, you know, the guy probably doesn't want to be in the center of being attacked by everybody and will probably defend himself at some point, I would think.
I would think that at some point he can't resist anymore just jabbing back. And we did see a little bit of that.
There's
from
been
his,
some pushback
his,
from
his
Aaron.
Office. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think at some point he makes a similar kind of off the cuff comment to Jerry's about maybe one or both of them.
Yeah. Would he call? Well, never mind. I'm going to. Never mind.
Oh, come on.
Discretion is the better part of valor.
Will that be in the next podcast?
No.
Okay. And then we've got a debate coming up, too, so we'll get to talk about that soon, too. The first
Several
debate.
Several debates, yeah.
Well, the first one, right.
The first
one. Three debates for now.
28th, right?
28th.
Yep.
The campus of the University of California, Davis.
Going to be a party.
Can never get too many debates. That could, I mean, I'm excited for the debates because we really don't know how either of them is going to handle this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I can think of three people who will be there. They're all sitting right here.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll podcast from the debate.
Oh.
Probably not.
No.
We'll be
probably
busy.
Not. We'll
yeah.
be
no
busy.
Thanks.
We'll, gotta we'll go, be busy. You got to go do your paying job.
Right.
Do I have one of those?
Yes. Okay. Well, that's it. Juliet Williams from the AP and Anthony York from Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED. And maybe some budget talk or something else next time. But we'll see you next time.